Yeah. Well, I mean, it I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I was a little confused at first, but not pleasantly confused, right? And I think that was the point. I think that, you know, although it is about sort of what's real and what isn't, who are you and who are you? Who does the world see you as? Who do you see yourself as? I don't think that, like, some of it was very explicit. Like, we'll talk about there are certain scenes that are very metatextual because there's a movie being filmed called Double Bind that where characters almost sound like they're talking about the plot of Perfect Blue and what's happening to Mima, you know? But the way that those scenes between fantasy and reality are cut and are seamless, I don't think that, as you were saying, I don't think for Khan it was supposed to be this this sort of neat explanation, right? Or neatly, I guess, sort of compartmentalized, you know? I think it was supposed to be this almost seamless melding because, I mean, there are scenes that are dreamlike, all right, or some sort of hallucination that Mima's having. But then the next scene is her filming or her waking up in her room and wondering what the hell was that. And I really, really enjoyed that. So my overall impression was just that I like weird fiction, right? And this was a very weird anime, weird film, because I think weird fiction excels more than anything at you walking away from watching a weird movie or reading a weird book or weird short story and sort of having this uncanniness and sort of like this feeling of like, what the hell did I just read or watch, you know? Like something that kind of like burrows itself into your brain where you think about it long after you've watched it, you know? And you maybe even start to see, and now, I mean, this is the kind of aim of it. You even start to sort of see, how can I explain this? I guess like the interrogations of reality and fantasy in my own life, you know, I start to think about those things, you know what I mean? And I think that I tried to read some kind of post analysis after watching it, but I actually kind of had to like kind of close, and I was going to watch some video essays, but I kind of had to close them out and say, actually, I don't want someone to try to explain this to me. You know, I would rather talk about it, of course, but I don't think it's a piece of art that's meant to be sort of explained. I think that uncanny feeling is not only mirrored, is a kind of mirror of reality, right? That's expressed in the film is very much a mirror of reality. And I just have to say the way it was cut, the music, everything. I mean, once again, it was just, what the hell did I just watch, you know? But I liked it, though. I loved it.
Yeah, it's like one of those, it's a nice sort of moment, just kind of, and also it's like, it's not too long. I feel like this is an important thing. It is like, it comes in like just over an hour. And so you're sort of not dealing with like the kind of, like too many sort of plot points, despite the fact that this is kind of a complicated film. Because as you sort of mentioned, like there are, when I watched it the first time, like the way that I saw it was, okay, you kind of have this sort of central story, which is of like a former pop star who sort of wants to leave to kind of develop her career, wants to become an actor, wants to sort of do more stuff and like just be in the sort of confined girl group that was sort of introduced to her in like in the beginning of the film. You know, so she books like a few jobs, and like some of those jobs sort of feel quite weird, but like the one that you reference is like this kind of detective TV show where, and this is where I was sort of confused by, because I think the first time I watched it, I wasn't really paying attention to the actual plot point of the in-universe TV show,
right?
Which is kind of like it's a sort of police detective show, but it involves it also sort of involves a sort of like confusion of identity and the sort of the central character of Perfect Blue, Mina, who is the pop star who sort of leaves, kind of becomes a character, or is a character, you find out later, but is a character in this fictional TV show,
right?
Which was like, I didn't actually like clock that on my first watch. So initially I was just like, yeah, like, you know, she's sort of an actor. And so obviously because she's playing someone else, she's kind of confused about who she is and like all this weird stuff going on. And then I'm just like, oh no, actually there are lots of layers of confusion. And like, I sort of made a tally of the amount of like Minas that are sort of present in this film.
Right.
And there are like five different versions of Mina in this film who are occupied by both, like she occupies two versions of it at least, but like, you know, as we learn later on, like her assistant occupies like one version, which you're not sure whether, you know, you're not sure throughout the film, is this kind of a vision that you're having or like an actual person? And even at the end, right, like I think I had it in my head like the first time, but oh no, like her assistant was wearing a costume that looked like Mina, and that's why she was confused. But yeah. When I watched it a second time, I was like, no, like, did she just like murder her assistant because he was worried?
Oh, is she like, or is she like some scenes? And like, is she like fighting with herself right now?
Yeah. It's like, and then you have like the stalker who like is also a version, but also is an actor or is implied as an actor in the TV show, but also like moments later isn't. And right. So he occupies like another version of Mina, who again, you are not entirely sure whether like, is this person legit, is an actor? Is right. So like, there are lots of layers in this, and like, you can understand. I agree with you in the sense of like, it may not even be worth like necessarily kind of trying to understand this as a story. Mm. In the phrasing of like, yeah, what you call it? What's his name? I keep thinking Christopher Hitchens, but it's not Christopher Nolan and his whole thing. Like, you know, don't try understand it, try feel it, which is something Christopher Hitchens would never do. Never say.
Wasn't that like a line in a Tenet?
Yeah, that was the line in Tenet, don't try understand it. And yet, like, and the interesting reaction to that, and the reason why I think that Tenet is like such a kind of cool and fun film, is that like the immediate reactions to that was, no, we're going to try and understand Tenet. Yeah, we're going to try and like do the timelines, and we're going to make these videos that say, oh no, the timelines don't make sense and all that stuff. And it's like, it's not like that complicated, this thing. Right. If you want to break it down, you can, right?
Right, right.
But it's, as you sort of imply, like it's not necessarily like the point of the film, and you don't really get anything out of it, right?
Right, right.
But I think that's sort of an interesting part of it. I was reading just now when you were talking last time, that so Perfect Blue, it's a bit of history on this. Perfect Blue was supposed to be a live action film, and it was supposed to be adapted from a Japanese novel. But because of an earthquake that hit the studio, or the original studio that was supposed to produce the live action version of it, they decided to make it an anime instead.
Can I just add something to that? There's a scene in this film in Perfect Blue where in the background in Mima's room, there's a news report playing of an earthquake.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of interesting that it seemed like that snuck its way, that real life event, and snuck its way into the movie. That's interesting.
Yeah, that is actually a very interesting point. I didn't actually notice it. So that's quite good. Well done for noticing that. But yeah, this was supposed to be a live action film. It was supposed to be, and it kind of became an anime part of like out of like sort of economic necessity. But when Satoshi Kon and the rest of the kind of like animation team sort of joined, this was also a time, I think, to bear in mind, because this was something I read about Gainax and Evangelion, how like the kind of origin story behind Eva was partly to do out of like economic pressure, the sense for like the studio couldn't afford to sort of do more ambitious commercially driven anime, and so like the kind of mix of kind of economic pressure to sort of just produce new stuff kind of gave animators incentive to sort of do more avant-garde, more sort of experimental types of projects. And I did wonder, I don't know whether this is true. I've just sort of like, this was a sort of setting in the 90s. And I think like in the sort of context of like the recession that was happening in Japan at the time, I do wonder whether like this type of anime sort of comes out of that type of environment. Because it is one where like in, you know, the animation studios are kind of under a lot of pressure to produce, to just produce like films and TV shows. And to do so with like as kind of limiting and as like minimal budgets as possible. So I am curious whether part of the reason why this was sort of created was out of that type of necessity.
Right. It's interesting too, because watching this made me want to look up other anime like Serial Experiments Lane, like Perfect Blue, because again, like I told you at the beginning, I as a kid, you know, I mean, even until I guess, you know, my like early 20s, I just wasn't very familiar with anime. So I didn't realize that, I mean, there's an entire subgenre that's devoted to not just avant-gardism, but more like, I guess, psychological thrillers, you know, horrors. And again, I just feel like this was maybe evocative of that certain historical moment, and maybe socioeconomic pressures too, right? And conditions.